So here's an interesting little tidbit. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about TikTok and how the Chinese government's using it to gather information and how we're going to ban TikTok. And you know, to kind of make it worse, I think Microsoft jumped into the middle of this. There's actually talks of Microsoft going to buy TikTok because maybe they want that information. Who knew? But here to share some thoughts on, is this a good idea, bad idea? Is TikTok horrible? And you know, what are the Chinese doing in this election? We talk a lot about Russia. What are the Chinese doing? I've asked Emily Delabrere to come talk with us. She's the co-founder of Horizon Advisory, one of those great places that keeps an eye on our Chinese friends. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thanks for having me on.
So TikTok, we hear a lot. The Chinese government's using it to spy on us, to gather our data. How bad is it?
I mean, it's bad. But the threat of TikTok isn't just a threat of espionage. And this is what's getting missed in the TikTok question, but also like more broadly when we talk about what it is that Chinese systems are doing. So we're not noticing this in 5G either. Yes, TikTok gives China the chance to spy. So they get access to a whole lot of teenagers' videos. But what the actual threat is moves so far beyond that. TikTok is a massive repository of information. It's all of the information on human faces, all of the information on human behavior and what it is people watch and for what and how they react to those screens. And of course, any additional espionage material that China collects from the phone when it has TikTok on it. And when all of that is gathered together, that is so hugely valuable. That's what innovation is. That's what resources are. That's what raw materials are in our new information technology environment. And China's gathering all of it. But then one more beat beyond that is that TikTok is a platform. It becomes the architecture for not only social media, but also social interaction and then commercial interaction. How many influencers are on social media and what does that do to brands? And then what happens if China controls the platforms of those influencers and they determine how those brands do? And so China decides which brand does well on the social media platform. Or of course, what news story is on the platform and how that plays. Like, what was the coverage of the Hong Kong protests on TikTok? Oh, wait, there was none.
Right.
Those threats are so much more dangerous than just spying. That's controlling how we interact.
No, I mean, that's, you know, the way you lay it out is, you know, when I read it, I'm going, so what? TikTok is just a bunch of kids doing videos. You know, it's just, you know, short little goofy stuff. You know, what could be the harm in that? But the way you lay this out, this is scary stuff. And look, this is how these organizations think and how they influence our elections. I mean, at the end of this, you know, when Christopher Wray, the FBI director this week, said that he's warning about China as much as Russia or anybody else, a lot of people are like, well, you know, but Russia, because all we're focused on is Russia while China's getting a free pass on all of this.
And of course, China realizes that. And so China uses Russia and uses Russia as a foil, but also as a proxy in a lot of ways. And then of course, they're doing their whole electoral game of their own across all sorts of dimensions that are way beyond the first order blunt tactics that Russia does and that involve using capital as well as using media and information influence and using everything from co-opted systems like TikTok to like Chinese propaganda outlets in the US.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of it, you know, the power that, you know, when you laid it out like that, the power of making sure that they control what you see and you read and the context in which it's in. I mean, that's enormously powerful, especially in a society like ours that's heavily dependent right now on those images and on that social media.
Yeah, absolutely. And what China's adept at doing is finding ways to make sure this is the case, not just of like the Chinese owned company in the US, but also of the American company, the American media outlet, because China fuses economic strategy with its larger strategy. And so it's out there saying like the US has this open market and, you know, US players work by their commercial interests. So, oh, if you leverage their commercial interests and your large market or your dedicated capital, you can make sure that Politico is telling you what you want them to tell you about the election or about this policy or about whatever.
And you know, what's interesting is, since you brought that up, you know, I was just reading a story back from June about the National Institute of Health being, you know, basically, you know, China has bought into a lot of our scientists. They've basically, you know, corrupted the entire research arm and the all of this stuff. And it's and what's amazing to me is it's not a lot of money. That's the part again that I keep coming back to. You're going, yeah, we fund all these grants, we do all this stuff through the NIH, we do all this research, and China comes in and basically steals most of it with pennies.
It's so cheap. They have found the cheapest strategy, and it works like that across the board. Because the thing is, the NIH money is always going to be there. But so, you know, all those researchers have that, and then someone comes to them and says, oh, hey, you just get like, you know, 30,000 grand more. Yeah, absolutely. And it helps that all of the fundamental assumptions undergirding our research ecosystem, as well in many ways as our information ecosystem, are about the importance of openness and about sharing, which is great. But then China says, all we're asking you to do is to share internationally, and that's normative good, right? Except China's using that normative good to acquire science and technology that it's using for a strategic offensive against our system.
So basically what you're saying, and we've talked about this before, what you're saying is they've figured out the flaws in our capitalist system and in our openness, and they're actively using it against us. So wouldn't the sane, rational person say, well, you know, these are the rules that we set up. They're just playing the game, Emily. They're just playing by the rules. There's nothing wrong here.
I mean, they're not playing by the rules is the point. Because what they've figured out is how you can break the rules in this system and not get caught or bribe the umpire. And I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to bribe the umpire. I have to go back and check because sports have changed a lot in the past few months, but I think that's still not allowed. So our problem, though, is that you can't just go and say, like, kick China out of the arena. You also have to figure out how to bring the umpires back on board.
And you know, but here's the thing. I mean, right now we're in this moment where it seems like, you know, they're basically, you know, doing whatever they want. The administration today, I don't know if you saw this, but the administration today has they say they're going to, you know, sanction this Zhejiang Production and Construction Corporation, something that Axios calls a paramilitary organization that's operating in this Zhejiang Ping place. That evidently they're you know, guilty of all these human rights violations. You know, we've all seen the video, you know, of these people being herded and in the, you know, construction places. You know, is this a step in the right direction? Is this what has to happen? I mean, is Trump? I want to give him credit for something. Is this something worth credit?
So, yes, right, calling out a Chinese military civil fusion company that's participating in this, you know, deliberate genocide against a minority, that's a good step. So is saying that TikTok should be owned by a US company. But at this point, we've had so many first steps. What this administration is really good at doing is firing opening salvos against China. The thing that comes after that is the actual strategy. Is moving beyond being defensive and whack-a-mole and reactive and calling out one company or another company or one, you know, lying bid on China's end.
Right.
What you have to do is say, here are all of the companies and the actors behind them that are bad, and here's how we're going to have a comprehensive response that's not just, you know, for 2 months trying to pull them out of our systems, but for 2 months trying to defend against them and create a positive alternative and then make sure that positive alternative works. Like, how long are we now into the 5G question? And has the US actually come up with any concerted effort with its partners to create a 5G alternative? And one that's nearly as compelling, and that's a positive thing you can point to, rather than just saying, why don't you rip out this cheap telecom system that's promising to let you advance. And so it's the same thing now as we see these moves against military companies. That's great. Those are important first steps. We're saying China's bad. That's right. But then you say, here's something that's good. And here's how we're following up. And here's also how we're going to convince all of you to act in a way on a commercial level and on a multilateral level that supports this China's bad strategy.
Right. So what I'm getting, what you're saying is, look, this is just another one of the as you put it, the whack-a-mole game. They found one more. This is systematic. This isn't just one company or another. This is systematic across. This is their policy. And they're just going through with it. There probably will be some retaliation for this somewhere along the line. But ultimately, you don't think that the administration has a real plan or an idea what to do after this.
We haven't seen it yet. And the thing is that as long as we spend our capital and like our political capital and our bandwidth on these whack-a-mole moves, that just buys China more time because they're going to go back. They're going to, you know, rebrand whatever company we just identified and come back at us with it. And we're going to have wasted all of our time trying to pull them out of our systems. And then they're just going to keep doing what they're doing under a different name or in a slightly different area.
Yeah, there's just so much here. And, you know, one of the other things I did want to ask you about, because, you know, and kind of pulling back to the TikTok thing, because, you know, there's so much. China is into so much. You know, they've got money into virtually everything. They influence so much. And as you pointed out, you know, they fly kind of under the radar to the Russia stuff. How do people protect themselves? And because this is the question that I keep coming back to and people keep asking. Look, okay, the Russians are doing these things. How do we know what they're doing? How do we see it? How do we know when we see it? And what do we do to try and stop it?
Yeah, and the thing with China is it's so much harder because their approach is so much more pervasive and just comprehensive. Like, they're not just at this to make sure that one election goes a certain way or for one election year or in one form of the information environment. What they're doing and what they've been doing for decades is making sure that the incentives of the players that influence the U.S. commercial and policy and information ecosystems are tied to Beijing. So it's no longer just what is the Chinese propaganda outlet saying about this presidential election. It's what is any outlet that gets its advertising revenue from China saying about any policy that might influence Beijing's international standing. And it's not just about which Chinese company is investing in the district of a congressional representative who's going to be voting on a China-relevant policy. It's also which congressional representative is getting money from a U.S. entity whose capital interests are tied entirely to China's. So there's so many levels you have to go back down in diagnosing all of this and what the incentives are, whether they're shaping like an election or a story that in turn will shape an election, that it's just this massive web of conspiracy, which isn't super easy to decode.
No, not at all. My head is already spinning going, yeah, that ain't going to happen. So how do we know? I mean, I guess we're screwed because the reality is our government to this point has done virtually nothing to stop any of this. Not just the Russians, but the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Iranians, who knows? But to me, the Chinese they're the ones who are the best at this stuff. They're the scary one to me.
Absolutely. But then you get to like, what we are still dealing with is like information and finding facts. And those still exist somewhere, I think. So the responsibility for every one of us is to go down to like what the primary sources of every story are and say, what happened here? And I mean, that's the case in disinformation broadly. It's really the same thing we do when we're worried about Russia. We say, what are the facts here? And was there a spin in this story? And which way did that spin go? And then like, really you piece the two together. And the other thing to know is that China is not going to want anything negative said about it. So if you're seeing something negative said about it, that probably means a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, I have a friend who was a former congressman, and he's from a, you know, rural district. He was from a rural district in Ohio, and this is back, you know early 2000s. You know, I guess early 2000s, where he had said something about China in a local newspaper, and they knew about it. It had come up in a meeting. This was before the internet, where you could search, you know, every article ever written and have, you know, the Google notifications and all of that. And they knew about it, which is how they do, how much homework they do and how detail oriented they are, which is why, again, we've got a guy like Donald Trump who doesn't seem to be all that detailed oriented. I'm a little worried.
But that point there goes back to the election question. And China, there's a Chinese think tank that literally ranks U.S. governors by how friendly they are to China. So they're following every representative and every state and local official to see how friendly they are and also how vulnerable they are to co-option. And that goes to every level of our policy apparatus.
So here's the thing. You know, I think a lot of people now, especially with the virus, because a lot of people are, you know, Trump's running around saying it's the China virus, and we're all, you know, supposed to believe that, you know, they did this to us. You know, and I'd love to hear your thought on that. But, you know, we're at a moment now where I think a lot of people are looking at China a little bit cross. Is this an opportunity to say, you know, maybe this is when, as a nation, we kind of move in a direction?
I mean, absolutely. Like, that should be what this year is. Like, so much has happened this year. Australia's burned. There's been this pandemic thing. I heard some talk about murder hornets. But also, like, China has taken down a thriving democracy. China has continued a genocide against a religious minority in Xinjiang. And China has lied about a virus, allowing it to turn into a pandemic that has taken down our entire system. Every one of those should be a watershed moment. And now, like, we're 8 months into 2020, like, this should be when we all wake up and say, you know what, the one thing we've learned about this is that China is not going to be a responsible stakeholder, and China is a bad actor in our system, and we all need to get together and do something about that.
But what do you say to the person who said, you know, it's kind of too late? They've infected, you know, to kind of use a pandemic frame, they've infected everything already. They own so much of our treasury, because I hear it all the time. They could collapse our economy immediately by just pulling out of the dollar. Is it too late? I mean, is it possible to be is permanent normal trade relations too much? You know, what's the direction, do you think?
Yeah, it's absolutely late, but it's not necessarily too late. We have a lot less time than we did before the pandemic, so that's one thing to flag. But at the same time, like, the U.S. still is the global leader, and the U.S. still has incumbent advantages that China doesn't have. The problem is that right now we're in a world where China has learned to take advantage of those opportunities and actually to turn them into weaknesses. So the U.S. has to, like, sit back down and say, we still have the best innovative capacity in the world. We still, no matter what we've done, have the strongest network of allies and partners. And we still have the strongest commercial sector. So how do you take those? And do you protect them from China's co-option and actually marshal them into bringing about a real, effective, proactive strategic response? And if you do that, then there's no hope for China. But that's a big ask, and there isn't very much time for it.
And what do you, I guess, you know, time frame? 2, 5 years, year, five, what?
You know what? Before COVID, I said we have 5 years. Now, I'd give us 2 if we're lucky.
And I guess then the question becomes, do we have faith that Joe Biden gets this? Because the sad reality is, just several months ago, he said China's not a problem. Do we have faith that now he's coming around?
This is where we come into the picture, and where, like, the citizens of the U.S. come into the picture. Washington, and that's not just whoever's president, but again, as the election story points out, this is, like, all representatives and also all local politicians. They should know that this is something that they have to do something about, because it's our future world that's at stake. And also, the private sector needs to hear that too, because obviously, government has a lot less influence these days in international affairs than does the private sector. And it should not play well for a U.S. company or a U.S. fund or any U.S. actor to be working with an authoritarian state that's trying to take over the world.
I absolutely agree, which is why I'm a big fan of Buy American, which is why I do check where things are made, and I advocate for people to do that as well. But I'm hoping that this is the moment. I'm hoping we move forward. Emily, as always, great talking with you. Scary, but good talking with you. I appreciate the information.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff, as always. Emily, our China expert. Make sure you check out their website, Horizon Advisory. We'll get links out on how you can take a look at that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.